Today, we're going to continue looking at this concept or this theme of rest and Sabbath. And we're going to be looking at a passage very familiar at the end of Matthew 11, Jesus' invitation to come to him, anyone who is weary. So this is a familiar passage, but to get to the significance of that invitation that Jesus gives at the end of that chapter, I think we need to sit with the tension of the rest of Matthew 11. So we are going to read that together. Well, I'll read it, and you can read along with me, hopefully, if that works. Yes, it does. So Matthew 11, firstly, verse 1 to 24. After Jesus had finished instructing his 12 disciples, he went from there to teach and preach in the towns of Galilee. When John, who was in prison, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else?" Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you see and hear. The blind receive sight, the lame walk. Those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me." As John's disciples were leaving, Jesus began to speak to the crowd about John. "What did you go out into the wilderness to see? A reed swayed by the wind? If not, what did you go to see? A man dressed in fine clothes? No, those who wear fine clothes are in king's palaces. Then what did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet. This is the one about whom it is written, 'I will send my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you.' Truly, I tell you, among those born of women, there has not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist, yet whoever is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has been subjected to violence, and violent people have been raiding it. For all the prophets and the law prophesied until John, and if you are willing to accept it, he is the Elijah who was to come. Whoever has ears, let them hear." "To what can I compare this generation? They are like children sitting in the marketplace and calling out to others, 'We played the pipe for you, and you did not dance. We sang a dirge, and you did not mourn.' For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say, 'He has a demon.' The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, 'Here is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.' But wisdom is proved right by her deeds." Then Jesus began to denounce the towns in which most of his miracles had been performed because they did not repent. "Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida! For if the miracles that were performed in you had been performed in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. But I tell you, it will be more bearable for Tyre and Sidon on the day of judgment than for you. And for you, Capernaum, will you be lifted to the heavens? No, you will go down to Hades. For if the miracles that were performed in you had been performed in Sodom, it would have remained to this day. But I tell you that it will be more bearable for Sodom on the day of judgment than for you." As we've just read, the chapter begins with John the Baptist sending some of his disciples to check if Jesus actually is who he said he was, the Messiah. John, being in prison, is likely looking or hoping for a straight answer to receive some rest for his troubled mind, but that's not what he gets. Rather than pointing back to the prophets and interpretation of those written and oral traditions, Jesus points to the fruit of his ministry. The answer he gives, that the blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, and the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and good news is proclaimed to the poor, those are somewhat obscure answers to John's direct question. The Messiah, of course, was also meant to restore the kingdom of Israel. That's not what Jesus is saying, though. Jesus' answer to John's question effectively says, "Do you trust me? And are you willing for an interpretation of the scriptures you know so well to be different to what you expected?" I wonder what it must have been like for John in prison receiving that answer. Would he have found the rest he was seeking for his mind? I wonder if, when we have questions for Jesus, we are willing for the answer to be something unexpected, and if in those situations we are willing to trust him. What questions do you have for Jesus at the moment? What's occupying your mind? What rest do you need that can only be found in trusting God? The chapter continues, praising John's faithfulness and the task that he had fulfilled, and then turns the questions to the crowd who was listening. Will you accept the ministry of John and of Jesus? Or will you criticize and complain when they do and say things they don't expect? It's the latter that Jesus compares the crowd, and likely the religious leaders amongst them too. They are like children who criticize other children for not behaving the way they think they should. We play an upbeat tune and you don't dance like you should. We sing a sad song and you don't mourn. We see this kind of thing a lot these days, I think. Christians complaining about other Christians that don't behave in the ways that the first lot think the second lot should. The judgment, the accusations cast, and the unavoidable hypocrisy that then results. As they, and sometimes, if we're honest, we point at the speck in someone else's eye and miss the plank in our own. And Jesus pronounces judgment on that hypocrisy. He draws a shocking contrast for those original hearers between Jewish cities and Gentile cities, known by the Jews as sinful and unrepentant. Tyre and Sidon, well known for their arrogance and pride, not to mention their worship of false gods, and of course the infamous Sodom, are held up by Jesus as being more receptive, likely to be more receptive to his ministry than these Jewish cities, and that it would be better for them on the day of judgment than the cities who should know better, because they saw the miracles and they rejected them. If you are one of the crowd there only because you've been caught up in the spectacle of the event of Jesus, certainly, if you are one of the religious leaders in that group, you are at best extremely uncomfortable. At worst, you're plotting to kill Jesus. Rest is far from your mind, your body, and your spirit as you listen to these words of Christ. But there were those in the crowd who were open to what Jesus was saying. Let's finish chapter 11. At that time, Jesus said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and the learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this is what you were pleased to do. All things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble at heart. And you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. With these words, Jesus is drawing a contrast between his way and the way the people were used to in the religious systems. The contrast is that of the yoke of legalism being harder and the burden that the religious leaders were putting on the people being heavy. In his critique, in the lead up to this invitation, Jesus is showing this. He builds the tension and then he releases it as he highlights the need for humility, the need to follow him, whether his way is the way we want it to be or not. It is his way that he is calling us to rest in. And at times that is hard. That requires giving up control. It requires a reliance on God that does not get bogged down in expectations prior understandings of what God did or didn't do. It requires the humility and innocence that is often associated with children. The wise and learned he mentions are those who stubbornly refuse to repent and learn from and accept the ministry of Jesus. The little children are those who innocently, not naively, but innocently receive Jesus' revelation of who God is. It is those who are able to find the rest that Jesus promises. It is those who will find rest, even amidst the challenge of discipleship. If we are to find and maintain rhythms of rest as we are commanded to, Jesus is saying to us that we need to remain humble, maintain innocence, focus on Him, not on what others are or aren't doing. To truly experience the ease of Jesus' yoke and the lightness of the burden of discipleship, our focus must remain and be sharply on Jesus. The paradox of discipleship, of following Jesus, if we take it seriously, is that it is hard. It's a call to give up our lives. And yet Jesus invites us to rest in Him, to focus on Him, to receive His love, and to follow Him on the path that He has for us. I wonder if we truly keep our eyes fixed on Jesus by finding and maintaining rhythms of rest, where it is that He will lead us this year. I wonder. I love the way the Message paraphrase of this section puts it. You might be familiar with it. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, Jesus says. Get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it, Jesus says. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Would this be our prayer for each other and us as a community as we go into a new week and this year gets underway?